Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Has listening to How Fitting helped you create a better fit in your fashion business? Episode 100 of this podcast is coming up, and I'm planning a special episode featuring the most notable moments from the 104 guests I've had on this podcast so far, plus your story. Head over to howfittingpodcast.com and tell me about your favorite How Fitting episode and how it has impacted you or your business. Submit your answers or send me a voice note by August 1st, 2024 to be included in the episode. The link is in the show notes. Today, I'm joined by Selena Ho, the founder and CEO of sustainable consultancy Recloseted. So welcome to the show, Selena.
Thanks for having me, Allison. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, we just did a podcast swap. So I was just on the Recloseted radio podcast. And now Selena is over here to talk about how sustainable brands can really transform the fashion industry. So I'm excited to dive into this conversation. For those who are listening and meeting you for the first time, Selena, could you share just a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Selena. It's nice to meet everyone. I'm on a mission to just make a positive impact on the world. And when it comes to fashion, I truly think that sustainability is the future, as with many other industries. And so I have the privilege of working with amazing founders, and I know Allison does as well, that are genuinely doing great things. And so I help through consulting services, through business and sustainability consulting services to help launch and scale sustainable fashion brands. It is so fun to be able to call this my job. I also have a Recloseted radio podcast, like Allison mentioned. So yeah, in a nutshell, it's just really helping genuinely conscious brands succeed and giving them the education and the support they need to be able to make that positive impact.
So cool. So you talk a lot about transforming the harmful fashion industry. And I'm curious to know, what exactly is the transformation you are working to achieve? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, this is a really great question. I love actually thinking about this. So if we take a step back, the first thing that really surprised me about the industry is just how ancient it still is. And we were just talking about on my podcast, that, you know, you were saying how there's no template for tech packs, but the fashion industry has been around for like centuries. And so that to me was something that was very interesting to me. And I find that a lot of people just continue to do things a certain way just because it's been done a certain way. And that is just not what we need in this industry and in many industries. Like, we need to change. We need to think differently. Like, the existing linear fashion economy where we take, make, consume, and then we throw away, like, that's just not viable anymore. And so we need to think differently. And so when I talk about transforming the industry, it's like thinking about different business models, thinking about different materials, thinking about how brands can approach business differently so that they can actually make a better impact. And so I know that it can sound a bit like fluffy or whatever, but genuinely, that's what I want to see. Like, I want to see an industry that's been around for a really long time and hasn't seen a lot of change actually change and actually do things that can actually be better for the world. So, yeah.
So I'm going to make you be more specific here. And I totally agree with, like, there's all that, like, the industry is very old school. We've been doing things this way forever. And now we see the negative effects of that. But on the positive side, like, what is, and this, I'm sure it could look a lot of different ways, but is there a certain, like, what does a transformed fashion industry look like? Like, let's say 10 years from now or whatever, like, the industry is transformed. What do you hope that looks like?
Yeah, I feel like the first thing is the business models, like I was talking about, because right now fashion brands only make more money if they sell more stuff. That's just the unfortunate reality. And so what happens is brands like they produce a collection and they think about the next collection because they need to make more revenue. And so that's something that needs to change. And I know we've had a lot of talks of now, you know, with blockchain and all these things and technology, like can brands now hold on to something for longer? And can we like resell pieces? And if we resell pieces, can brands get a kickback? Like there's different ways you can think about this. So I would love in a transformed world where this is addressed, because I think until we can address the production issue, like everything else is kind of a moot point. And so that's the first piece. And then the second piece is just, it becomes table stakes, because right now I call myself like a sustainable fashion consultant. You probably call yourself a sustainable pattern maker, but why can't we just be a consultant and a pattern maker, and like sustainability is table stakes and everyone recognizes that you should be making for intentionality and longevity and you should be choosing better materials. So that's kind of, I would say, like the broad two things I would love to see happen. And then I feel like once those things happen, everything else will kind of fall into place. Like once we address the production piece, once we address how like this is now table stakes, we no longer need to debate if this is a thing. We know what we need to do. Like I feel like then the industry will finally be transformed.
Yeah, I love that word. Sustainability is not like a feature. It's the norm. It's yeah. It's just across the board. You don't need to say it because it's obvious that brands are doing it. Yeah. So cool. How close do you think the industry is at getting there?
I guess my answer to this kind of varies based on the day, if I'm being honest. And I have, again, like the privilege of working with a lot of amazing brands that are doing great work. But then on the flip side, I know there's also bigger brands that are saying they're doing stuff, but then they're not. And so we're kind of, I think, in this tricky stage where the clock is ticking and everyone agrees that we need to get our act together. And at like every single conference I've spoken at or been at, like everyone is like everyone's in cahoots. Everyone understands we're all on the same page, but then there's still so much work to be done. And there were so many like 2030 goals, and 2030 is now 6 years away. So there's days where I'm optimistic, there's days where I'm pessimistic. And I think at the end of the day, we do just need to take action. And I think we need to also take pressure off the fact that we don't need to make everything perfect. And instead, we just need to do what's best right now based on our circumstances, our budgets, and what we have bandwidth for. But I think we all need to act, and we all need to act quickly because, yeah, time is ticking.
So rather than, and I've always kind of questioned this about brand sustainability goals where they're like by 2050 or by 2030. And it's like, okay, you have this goal from 20 years from now, but like, what does that mean for this year? Like, what are you doing now to reach that? And it sounds like you're more focusing like not by a specific date. What should we get to? But like, what can you do now? What can we do today to like work towards this? And it'll take as long as it takes, but at least it makes sure that there's action happening now versus like, oh yeah, we've got 20 years to figure this out. Is that kind of what your approach is?
Yeah, I will say, I think it's still helpful to have an overarching strategy, of course, and like a goal. But I think the problem is a lot of these companies will push like really big 5, 10, 15 year goals. And it sounds amazing. There's always like a big celebration whenever they announce it. And then you kind of never talk about it again. And if they don't hit those targets, it's kind of brushed under the rug, or they extend the timeline. And so my point, I guess, is that like that piece is not helpful. So instead of just aiming for the stars, which you should, I think you should also be realistic and really thoughtfully break down how you're going to get there, and then actually take meaningful action. And if in the process you discover that things are taking longer, or things are more complicated, or the technology is not there, then I think it is important to address that and talk about it and communicate it instead of just brushing it under the rug, because then it seems like no one's doing anything. And then everyone kind of aims high, because if you think about it, if one brand's aiming high and then you're not, it kind of looks bad. But then if everyone's very transparent about this process and they're like, we want to do this, but you know, the reality is A, like the technology is not there, or like B, it costs too much money right now, then people are aware, and then we can kind of be a little bit more realistic about this whole thing.
That makes sense. So you mentioned a few kind of like challenges, like the technology and money. Are there any other, like, what are the biggest challenges are there more than just those two seeing this transformation happen?
Yeah, I would say the biggest one definitely is funding. I will say, given the economy right now, I know a lot of brands and businesses are strapped right now, and the funding is twofold, right? Like from an investment perspective, I know a lot of there is a lot of interest in investing in green or sustainable businesses, but I think unfortunately right now the time horizon just isn't realistic. Like if we look at what happened with Renewsol, right, which happened like a few months ago, it was something that shocked the industry, but for folks that were kind of paying attention, it wasn't that shocking because unfortunately a lot of investors right now, they want like a return in 5 years or whatever, and a lot of this technology is so new, and so you do need to be patient with it. You do need to invest in it and understand that this is a longer term play. And so from an investment perspective, like that's been a bit messy right now, and I wish that it wasn't the case. And then from a consumer perspective, I feel like a lot of people are now aware about fast fashion and they know they need to support sustainable fashion brands, but unfortunately, the willingness to pay in most instances still isn't there. So if you ask the average customer, like, hey, there's this dress, you can buy it from a fast fashion brand for, I don't know, $50, or you could support a local brand and buy it for 150, I think people will tell other people they will support the sustainable fashion brand because maybe they want to feel like they're doing good, but in reality, they're probably like sneakily buying it from the fast fashion brand. So unfortunately, I think the willingness to pay isn't there quite yet. And there's still some customers where maybe they are willing to do it, but I would say the vast majority, unfortunately, isn't. And so there's that funding piece, which makes it hard. And then, yeah, like the technology as well. Like we, if you just even look at vegan leather, right? Like a lot of it's made out of plastic, and we have technology now, which is amazing, that's made out of apples or mushrooms, but still some of that has plastic in it too. So I think we're slowly moving in the right direction, but unfortunately, we do need to vote with our dollars, both as consumers and as investors. And so, yeah, the reality is that we need funding and we need innovation, and we probably need a little bit more time as well.
Yeah, for sure. So you maybe touched on this a little bit, but like, what do you think it will take to get to that future when sustainable brands are the norm? You no longer have to specify that they're sustainable. I know you work with brands, but you mentioned just now that like it's going to take buy-in from consumers, probably governments as well for regulations, supply chain vendors, as well as investors. So for, what are kind of the key things from those areas that you think it'll take? And then we can talk more specifically about like brands and what you're doing on the brand side.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. Like, there's a lot of stakeholders involved, and thankfully, there's regulation coming down the pipeline. So, I do think government has a really big role to play here. The EU is spearheading a lot of really exciting changes. I know there's a lot of changes in the US as well. And so, that is good. It'll be interesting to see how it's executed, though. But I think, like, just high level, it's good that, like, it's promising that we finally have some legal items coming in. And then from a consumer perspective, like I mentioned, consumers have a huge responsibility, right? Like if businesses understand that this is where the money is, everyone will flock to it beyond it just having to be like for compilation for like legal issues. Like if consumers say, I want XYZ materials, I don't want plastic in my clothes anymore, I want to be able to wear something for years and years and years, I want it to be timeless. Like if there's a demand for it, then businesses will do that. So consumers have a huge role to play. And then of course, brands have a really big responsibility to try to do the best they can. And I understand that it's difficult, especially when brands are trying to make more money and be more profitable. And we kind of talked about this on your Recloser Radio podcast, where it's tough, right? Like we talked about a little bit about all the costs involved with designing a product. And so I know costs add up, but whenever possible, if you can choose better materials, or like we always both say, like if you can just be more intentional from the get-go around what you're producing and making sure there's a need for it, like even that adds and helps so much. So yeah, I think like all three stakeholders are, it's really, really important.
Yeah, for sure. So what Do you think profit and sustainability are in conflict, or is it possible to do well at both? Because, funding is a big issue, and we were talking about how the industry has to sell more to make more money. So do you see that there's a way where we can work towards be sustainable and be profitable, or are they in opposite directions?
I think there's a way to make it so that it is in the same direction. I do think it will take a bit of intentionality, unfortunately, because from the get-go, they seem like they are at competition with each other. Because if you think about the fact that, even in your episode, we were talking about designing a product, even for fit, like you might have to do two patterns. And so that adds more costs. If you want to invest in better materials, that adds more costs. But if we zoom out a little bit and you think about your brand ethos, like if your brand ethos is to create timeless, conscious, amazing, high quality pieces, then perhaps that's the buy-in for your brand. That's what differentiates it. And that actually is what's going to get you more sales. And so I think it's really around the intentionality behind it and being really strategic about what you invest in and what you don't. And so I think it is possible, but you do have to be really strategic about how you go about it, because unfortunately, right now, a lot of stuff is a bit more expensive because a lot of these items haven't hit scale yet. But we do need brands to invest in these better materials or invest in these better service providers or invest in these better production partners, because without that, they're going to go out of business, like we saw with Renewsoul. So it is really, really important to do what you can.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's a great point of if the, well, two things stood out from what you just said. One being you can be profitable creating product as well as sustainable, but not if you're just creating product for the sake of creating product. Like we want to be create product that people want to buy so that they're going to buy it and there's not going to be a bunch of leftover overproduction happening. So being intentional about the product so that it's maybe fewer items being made or fewer new designs being made, but those designs are more high quality. People are willing to pay for them because they're more valuable. Both, from the kind of ethics side of things or the value side of things, but also just the product side, like it's a better product. So that's one point that I think was really great from what you just said. And then the second being that if we don't, as brands, invest in the businesses, like the materials, the suppliers, the factories that are trying to be more sustainable, they will go out of business. It is totally a thing both on the brand side and vendor side. It's like the more you do it, you get to a, like early stages of like low volume production or like a startup stage is the most costly. And then you get to that point where it is more profitable because you're able to streamline things. You find you can invest in the infrastructure to make it like quicker and faster, where you can still do it sustainably, but those kind of initial startup costs to like get this new technology or new process going is then now like paying off and paying for itself. But if these businesses can never get to that point of profitability, of kind of breaking even on that like R&D investment into these new systems, then it's always going to be way more expensive to produce sustainably. But if we get to that point, I think that's a great call out to say, like, if we're investing in that now, there will be a point where it kind of tips and it becomes more affordable to produce sustainably.
Yeah, it's kind of like what I was just saying with voting with your dollars with consumers, like you just mentioned. It's like as businesses, we need to invest in the future that we want to see in the industry, right?
For sure. So you work with, I know, both startups and like scaling and established brands, are there different kind of sustainable initiatives that you work with that you recommend for like each of those different stages of brands? Or are there kind of like sustainability goals and initiatives that kind of across the board you recommend for all stages of brands?
Yeah, I feel like when it comes to sustainability, there's things that I would recommend across the board, no matter the size of your business, which I think might be helpful to your listeners. So, first and foremost, just like understanding what your sustainability priorities are. Like, I talk about this all the time, but there's so much wrong with the fashion industry. Just close your eyes and choose, right? Like, there's so many things you could talk about: unethical labor. You could talk about, all the textile waste we're sending to landfills. Like, there's so much wrong with it. And as a single business, it is impossible for you to tackle all of those issues, and it is very overwhelming as well. And so, what I commonly see is that people go into this super gung-ho, super excited, but then they quickly get overwhelmed, and then they kind of give up, or like they're in this despair, like doom and gloom cycle, and that's not helpful. So instead, I always say pick one to two priorities. If you're a startup or a smaller brand, then maybe just pick one. And that's not to say that you're going to do everything else poorly, like not to say you're going to produce your clothes at an unethical factory, as an example, or not to say you're going to produce eons and eons of textile waste. It's just to say that you're going to do one thing really, really well, whether it's eliminating plastic from your supply chain, whether it's really tackling your carbon emissions, but you, as a startup brand, like have limited time, resources, and energy. So picking and choosing your battles, I think, is really important. So picking that sustainability priority is first and foremost like my biggest piece of advice for folks. And then next, it would be putting together a strategy around that. So thinking through how you can do your best around that one priority you have chosen and communicating it to your audience, right? Like, I've just talked a little bit about how I wish people were more transparent about like their big hairy goals. And so talk about why you've chosen this priority, what it means to you, what that looks like, and then talk about your roadmap and how you plan to scale up your sustainability initiatives, how people can support you. And then I love when brands kind of report back and talk about what they've done or what's happened. Like, I think Ghani is a really good example of that. They produce like a sustainability report every single year. And so, yeah, just being transparent with that. I think just making sure you pick and choose your battles, you know what your strategy is, you develop a roadmap, and then you communicate it and you're transparent across the board. I think that's my biggest piece of advice. And then also when it comes to, I guess, just like if like criticism or whatever, right? Like, brands are always, I think, so afraid of putting themselves out there when it comes to sustainability because they don't want to get backlash. And so it's resulted in a lot of green hushing, especially with the new regulation coming on. I think a lot of brands are now scared. And so I would say if you don't try, you will not get to where you're going to go. And so you need to put yourself out there. And instead of looking at it as criticism, I think you look at it as helpful feedback and indication and signs of what your community is looking for, what the consumer is looking for. And if you just explain, like, hey, we have like limited people working on this. We have like two people working on this, and we only have X amount of budget. Like, I think people would understand. And I think it's good for us to have a conversation around that versus just sweeping it under the rug, like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, right? Like, we need to talk about these things because the clock is ticking and we need to take action. And long gone are the days where we just kind of don't talk about anything and we hope for the best.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, and I love that because sustainability is so broad, and that's a question that I ask a lot of founders and designers on this podcast is, yeah, like what does sustainability mean to you and your brand? Because there are so many avenues, like you said, the labor, the, plastics, the emissions, the, do you produce local? What is the fiber is you overproduce? Like, there's so many aspects of sustainability that you can focus on that, yeah, it's every brand kind of picks where they want to start along that path. So are there any kind of different recommendations you have then for, okay, if you started off on that path, you picked your priorities, now you're scaling or you're established and you're a slightly bigger brand, are there different things that you kind of recommend at that point for those kind of stage of brands to be doing?
Yeah, so I know it's kind of tough not to go more detailed, but I would say it depends on the brand
Of course.
and it depends on the founder. So I would say for your one to two original priorities, if you feel like you can go deeper, you can do more stuff, then maybe you stick to it until you're fully happy with it. Or if you feel like you can make more impact doing more things as you grow in skill, then go for that as well. I would say with my previous comment of like picking and choosing your battles, that is probably most relevant when you have limited time, resources, and energy. But as you grow, as you scale, as you get more success, of course you can expand that and you can grow that. And I feel like my comment around communication and transparency is even more important as you grow in skill, because I just think you have such a bigger responsibility as a bigger brand. And so you should be setting the standard. You should be showing what other brands should be doing. So just making sure that you continue to communicate and be transparent and don't get more siloed as you grow bigger. Because I know sometimes the stakes can seem bigger because your community is bigger and, you know, there's more at stake. But I think that on the flip side, you should look at it as an opportunity to really set the standard.
Yeah, great advice. So when it comes to, you know, we were talking about greenwashing and like not talking about it for fear of backlash. And I think that's totally true of, because sustainability is so broad for a brand to say and like market and advertise like, oh, we're a sustainable brand. But then when you look into it, it's like, well, they might be unsustainable in this one area because they're only like focusing on certain, you know, one or two priorities. How do you recommend brands, or how have you seen brands like do well at talking about what they're doing and talking to the consumer about like how they're being sustainable without kind of like making this overly broad, vague, you know, statement and getting the backlash for not like, is it really just that kind of, you know, annual sustainability report, or are there other ways that kind of more day-to-day brands can be communicating to the customer that like we are sustainable without being misleading or overly vague?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, again, depends on the brand, but I can give you some examples of what we've suggested to clients. I would say first and foremost, figuring out what your priorities are, figuring out your strategy. And then I think internally, it's a decision about what you want to share and what you don't, and like exactly how transparent you want to be. Because I know sometimes, like we were even talking about it on your episode, but like designs can be confidential as an example. Mm-hmm. But if you're open to sharing where you're producing things, if you're open to kind of like the exact material composition, like I think that's helpful, but it is an internal discussion about what everyone's appetite is, because everyone's appetite for that is different. But with our clients, as much as possible, we like to show examples and case studies and also data, because data is something that people can anchor into and they can see, versus you saying you're green until you're actually green in the face. Like that doesn't mean anything.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
I would say like just like case studies, making things as digestible as possible. Like I know I mentioned an annual report or something like that, but even if you produce an annual report, making sure that it is so readable and digestible, and it's not just full of lingo that no one's going to read and no one's going to understand. Like write it in plain English, have diagrams, have pictures, make it really easy to read. And then once you put out an amazing resource like that, you can then slice and dice it into like social media posts. You can talk about it in your emails, but just really making sure you talk about it in plain English, you have facts and figures, you have examples. I think that at the end of the day speaks volumes. And so, yeah, those are just some like tangible things people can do. And for brands listening that maybe don't have the budget or the resources to do an annual report, like that's totally fine. You can even just share on your social media, like the behind the scenes of you creating your latest collection and perhaps like your thought process around designing the pieces, doing the market research, like selecting the materials. I think even that speaks so much about what you're trying to do from a sustainability perspective. So there's varying levels you can do it, but I think generally just do whatever you're comfortable with and whatever you have bandwidth for.
Gotcha. Yeah. So basically like you don't always need to say, oh, I'm a sustainable brand, but instead of just like saying that or saying this is like green products, really showing rather than using those vague terms that can be misinterpreted or misunderstood, or, you know, you can't do them perfectly, so then you get backlash. But rather than saying it in with those words, showing what you're doing, is that, it sounds like that's really what you advise brands do.
Yeah, just walk the walk, right? Like at the end of the day, I have a few clients that don't actually say they're sustainable at all, but in essence they are, and they are very, very intentional, but they just walk the walk. They have amazing products. People come to them for their products, and then they find out after the fact that they are sustainable, and it's like a nice cherry on top. And I think nowadays the most successful brands are product first, and they have an amazing product, and then you find out after the fact that they're also ethical and conscious, and that's the recipe of a successful brand. So walk the walk and then just talk about what you're doing, and the rest should fall into place.
Yeah, I love that because I always think of like a few years ago I was looking for to get like a new pair of like supportive like tennis shoes to just walk around, just to have that were comfortable and like good for my feet. And I was trying to find ones that were sustainable and like didn't have plastic in them and stuff. And it was so hard to find. Like the only brands I found that were sustainable, like were not very supportive. In terms of like just the product wasn't what I was looking for. And it's like I'm willing to spend more money on something sustainable here, but I couldn't find something that actually solved the problem and like did what I wanted it to. So it's like I'm not willing to spend. So I ended up going with one that does have plastic in it, but I've had them for like 5 years and they're still like in good quality. I still use them. I pretty much lived in them for the entire pandemic because like what else were we wearing? And so yeah, I went with kind of like the long lasting, I'm gonna use this a lot avenue with it, but it's like I wish there were more brands, and it sounds like you kind of agree with this. It's like the secret formula, you don't want to, sustainability is not a selling point if the product is not good. So it's like you can be as sustainable as possible, but if the product really is not fulfilling the need, no one's going to buy it. So it's like you want to have the product itself be good on its own, and then sustainability is the cherry on top. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I also always say, like, you can make the most beautiful product, use the best materials at the best factory in the world, but if at the end of the day, no one needs that product and no one wears it, you've made sustainable junk, right? Like, think about that. So, the goal is always to make a product that people wear, they need, they will use, and then try to do that in the most conscious manner possible, given like your current budget, given whatever is available right now. And so, yeah, just making sure that people really do take that customer first approach that I always talk about.
Yeah, I totally agree, as you know. So let's talk a little bit about numbers. Like you've talked about the budget in a little bit, but I think sometimes people are either really intimidated by like, oh, I don't have enough money to start a sustainable brand, or they think, oh, it's not actually that expensive. I'm going to start with one product. It like should be fine. And so like the kind of assumptions about what the budget is to be able to start a brand, especially a sustainable one, is kind of all over the place. Can you, I know it varies from brand to brand and product, but is there kind of a range of kind of funding, initial funding that you see as being kind of necessary to start a brand sustainably?
Yeah, I love this question. I actually got it so much that I created a free training. So
Oh,
I
cool.
will do like a high level of what's in the training and then I can kind of share it with your listeners. But
And then I
essentially,
can, if you send me the link, I'll put the link to that training in the show notes so people can check that out if they want a more detailed look.
yeah, that sounds great. But essentially, I will say, like, it does cost money, but it can be done in a way where you don't need like millions of dollars in your bank account. So, when it comes to investing, there's four categories I overview in the training that you need to invest in. So, the first is, of course, your product. So, if you don't have a design background, like, you need to be hiring someone like Allison or, anyone else. And then you need to pay for materials and then, of course, production. And your product costs are something you do not want to skimp out on because this is what's making you money. You want to make sure it's high quality. You want to make sure you're happy with it. So there's the product cost. And I will say, typically, that's around 50% of your budget. And it could be higher or lower depending on the product you produce. You kind of talked about this in your episode, but someone making a t-shirt is probably going to be cheaper than someone making a trench coat just because of the intricacy and the complexity of that. So that kind of ranges. And then after that, you have like your business startup costs. So hiring like your lawyer, your accountant, like all that stuff just to set up your business. And then you have your marketing costs. So these kind of vary depending on your budget, but you want to think through like a website. Are you going to do a launch event? Are you going to spend money on ads? Are you going to spend money on influencers? What does that look like? So that can vary depending on what your budget is. And then the last category I always say you need to invest in is yourself, like your own learning, your own development. So whether that's books, whether that's podcasts, whether that's courses, whether that's mentors, just making sure you invest in yourself because you don't want to be the bottleneck of your own business. And so those are the four categories. In the training, I have like this whole Excel template where I talk about rough costs for everything. So folks can go look at that if they want. And then in the training as well, I talk about how you can get the money you need to fund your brand. So if at the end of the exercise, you're like, okay, Selena, I don't have $20,000 or whatever it is, then I walk you through how you can get there. And so high level, I always talk about self-funding and using pre-sales to be able to successfully fund your brand. And the reason why I recommend those two funding mechanisms is because you can kind of depend on yourself when it comes to self-funding. So either your savings, 9-to-5 job, or contract gigs, like you try to fund as much as you can through self-funding. And then the rest you can get from your customers in advance through pre-sales. And I'm a big fan of pre-sales because for your first collection launch, you probably have no idea what the demand is. So
Or
you can actually figure
what
out.
sizes to make or what colors.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you have no idea what the demand is, no idea what sizes. And so this will really help you ensure that you order exactly what you need, which is more sustainable for the environment, but also more sustainable for your wallet as well. Because you've probably seen this, but there's so many founders that come to me after their first collection and they decided to do an inventory model. They spent like, I don't know, $50,000 on production or something scary like that, and things aren't selling. And now all of their life savings are like tied up in these unsold sweaters. And I just don't want anyone to deal with that because that's such a nightmare to be in. So yeah, high level, I recommend self-funding pre-sales. I talk about it more in the training, but folks can access it for free if they want at recloseted.com/budget. I go really detailed because, yeah, I firmly believe that if you want to start a business, you should go into it with your eyes wide open around like how much this is going to cost and how you can get that money.
Yeah, that's great. And I'll put the link to that in the show notes too. Yeah, just knowing like what are those buckets to be spending on so you don't, because I think it's so easy to forget to of like, oh, I need my website and I need the product. And then you forget like, okay, but like marketing the product is like a huge thing. You know, if nobody knows about it, you're still not going to get any sales, even if it's amazing. So yeah, knowing what those buckets are and then to be able to calculate that for your brand is super helpful. And I also think I'm curious to know your thoughts too on this. I think often what I see with sustainable brands and designers is that they forget to make it sustainable for themselves, where either, you know, they spend all the money on creating a product, on marketing, on paying their production people fairly, which is amazing, but then they forget at the end of the day that like the business can only sustain itself if the business is making money. And like you as the founder can only keep doing this business and like keep doing this work to like further this sustainable transformation in the industry if you have money to pay your rent and eat and like live a fulfilling life. And so I think that's a bucket that can often be forgotten in the sustainability picture is for founders to remember to pay themselves. And I know it's not always possible, like on the first collection, you probably won't make a lot of, you know, profit. And like leading up to it, you're investing a lot and you haven't made sales yet. So you might not be able to pay yourself at the beginning, but like getting to the point of being able to pay yourself as a founder, as the business owner, because that's a huge piece of it too. Like if you can't sustain yourself, then the business is not going to go like last very long either. So do you see that as well?
Yeah, I think that you really need to take an intentional approach and be very strategic from the get-go about being profitable. Because to your point, if you're not strategic about what you're spending money on, what you're charging for your pieces, then by the end of your first collection, you might have made your launch goal and you might be celebrating. But then if you look at how much you have left over at the end of the bank, it might not be something that you can live off of. So you do need to go into this with a very clear idea of like what you're spending money on, what you aren't, what you're going to be charging. And so, yeah, that's why I put together that funding training too, because I've seen a lot of people spend an obscene amount of money on certain things that they shouldn't be spending money on and then underinvest in other areas where they should be. And I know pricing and budgets and costs can be so hush hush sometimes in the industry. And so I just want people to know and go into this with their eyes wide open and just have an expectation around what things should cost. And if you're talking to, let's say, a service provider or you're talking to a production partner and like the prices aren't matching, then maybe it's a conversation around like why that is. You can dig a little bit deeper. But yeah, like profit is so important.
Totally. So I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about like why is sustainable fashion and all this that we've been chatting about, why is it important to you personally?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to me personally just because I have such a deep connection to the environment. Like, I'm someone that loves to be outdoors. I love hiking. I love snowboarding. I love traveling. And so I think we have like such a honor and privilege to live on this planet. And so we should also take care of it. And that means a balancing act of like living our best lives, doing all the things we want to do, but also maintaining enough for future generations. And so that's why I'm passionate about this, just because I've seen like the impact people have had when they're outside in nature, and I just feel like we need to just take care of it, right? Like Mother Nature gives us so much and we need to give back as well. And so that's why this is so important to me, not just with fashion, but just with everything. So, yeah.
So how did that like passion for the environment, and your values surrounding sustainable fashion, how did that turn into Recloseted?
Yeah, so I tell this story often, but I used to be at a corporate job that I did not like. And one day I was wearing a polyester blouse to work and I got a skin rash because I have quite sensitive skin. And at the time, I knew a lot about the fashion industry from my mom. She studied fashion design in Shanghai. She taught me like everything she knew. And I would always kind of be like, yeah, whatever, whenever she would tell me like polyester is bad. But then it was not until I got a skin rash. It was so itchy. I was in the middle of the meeting. It was like so embarrassing. I could see like my neck getting red and stuff. I know it's the worst, but I went into the bathroom and I was like trying to figure out what was going on. And I started Googling what polyester was. And I essentially found out it's crude oil and all this stuff. And I didn't realize that. Like, I think when my mom had expressed that it wasn't good, she basically was like, yeah, it's made out of not great materials and kind of left it at that. But I, upon realizing that, was like, wow, there's a lot of stuff about the fashion industry that we don't know about. And I think on surface, we see the glitzy and glamorous side. Like we see the fashion weeks, we see the influencers wearing all these pretty clothes, but we don't know what our clothes are made out of. And also, when I watched The True Cost and I learned all about that unethical labor that's going on, and also the millions and millions of tons of textile waste we send to the global south and to our landfills every year, I was just so shocked because the At that time, when I found out about it, people weren't really talking about it. People around me didn't really know about it. It was kind of niche at the time. Not everyone was talking about it. And so that's when I felt like I wanted to use my expertise and my skill set towards helping these businesses and towards really transforming the industry. So, yeah, it was very organic and it kind of just happened. But I, again, like I love that I get to call this my job.
Yeah, that's amazing. So when was that you kind of had this realization and start Recloseted?
Yeah, that was almost like 6.5 years ago now. And so I realized that I started doing some research. I put together like all my tips into like the Recloseted handbook, which is still something I sell today. And then I then started the podcast. I started interviewing a bunch of people. And then I started working with brands for free because, like I mentioned, I hated my corporate job and I needed like something that brought me joy in life. So I just worked with brands for free. I loved it. I got them results. And then it just really organically happened.
Nice. Yeah, so because you had mentioned like people weren't talking about all this as much at the time. And so that's what I was, because I feel like in the past, I don't know, 5 years, a lot more conversation has been happening around sustainable fashion. And so, like, yeah, you started before that and now are like being part of bringing this conversation more to the forefront, which is amazing. So I'm curious, has there ever been a time when you've had to make a difficult choice about following your values in your business? And if so, can you share more about what went into that decision?
Ooh, this is a good question. I'm trying to think. I guess one thing that I've always really prided myself in is the culture I'm trying to create at Recloseted, both with clients but also with the team. And because I've come from corporate backgrounds where sometimes I enjoyed the culture, but other times I didn't. I have taken as much as I can from those experiences to cr try to create like the best culture possible at Recloseted. And so sometimes I struggle with this because there is a fine line, I think, between like being a boss, being a manager, and then like being too friendly with your employees. And so there's been instances where people have maybe like missed deadlines or the quality of work isn't great. But because I'm trying to live by this value of like creating a really friendly and nurturing culture, I maybe haven't given feedback that I've had to. And then at the end, it's actually been more detrimental to myself, to that person, and to the business. And so just learning that I'm able to have the culture I want to have while still giving constructive feedback and leaning into my values is something that has happened in recent years. And so, yeah, like just navigating this, right? Like, how do you still be kind? How do you still be in align with your values, but also make sure you do what's best for the business? You also make sure that you're spending your money wisely and all this stuff. So, yeah.
That's super important. And I mean, it kind of goes along with, you know, treating everybody in like every step of this process well, like paying well, but also treating people well, because you can have toxic clothes, but you can also have a toxic environment. And so,
Of
yeah,
course,
that can
yeah.
be difficult decisions. I can see where it's like, okay, is the honest truth, it may be a little harsh, but like, is it what's needed right now to move towards that like goal of we want to be really good at this and we want to like have this open relationship where you want to see them improve because that's the best for every like themselves and you and everybody long term. Yeah, I've had kind of like personal conversations like that where it's like, okay, is this is bringing up this difficult conversation or like, you know, addressing some conflict. I care enough about the person that I want to see this resolved and see this like grow and see us overcome this together. And so bringing it up is better in the long term, even though it feels really scary. It's like easier to just like not say anything, but then, you know, long term, it's not going to work well.
Yeah, exactly. And with everyone that is brought into the team, like I always look at our relationship as like me trying to mentor them and help them grow and help them learn and develop. And so, in that lens, we actually do them a disservice if we don't give them feedback or if we hold back on things because they don't get to learn. And also, on your end, you build up resentment. And so, that's not good on any end. So, you need to give those, like, you need to have those difficult conversations, but you can have those conversations in a way where it is still kind and you still are able to deliver the message too, because I think like there was times where I would be like so afraid of giving like constructive feedback, and I would be so afraid of hurting people's feelings that the message would just get lost. Like it would just be like, oh, you're doing such a great job, but you know, or whatever it was. And so I think there's a and so now I'm just like at a point where it's like I can still be kind and I can still also just be like clear in what the expectations are and like give them feedback. And again, it's in service to everyone to do that.
So what are the ways that you and your team help brands fit their customer lifestyle and their sustainability values? Like, what are the different ways you work with brands?
Yeah, so with startup brands, we now have our Launch Your Brand course. So in there, that's like literally the A to Z playbook around how you can start and launch a successful and profitable fashion brand, because I'm a firm believer that you need to have that profitability in mind from the get-go so that you can be successful, like we talked about. And the reason why it's a course is because that way folks that have busy schedules, because a lot of our clients that start a brand, like they tend to have another 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can watch it on your own time. You can replay things. Everything's in there for you. It's also the most cost-effective way to do it. So that's why we have LYB, and that's that. And then from a more like medium to established brand perspective, we do consulting services. So we work with them on a tailored approach based on what they're struggling with right now, what their problems are now, and we design a complete A to Z plan to help them achieve their goals. So a lot of the times it's around like, okay, what's the strategy going to be? What's the roadmap? And then if they need support executing it, we will help them there as well. Every single project's a little bit different depending on the brand, the timelines, and of course the budget. But yeah, that's essentially how we work with brands.
Awesome. So I want to know, end on a high note, and what is the biggest transformation that you've seen in a brand that you've worked with or like seen in kind of the industry in terms of sustainability or anything else? Let's talk about.
Yeah. I feel like with a lot of our smaller brand founders, it's just so rewarding to see a lot of them in similar situations that I was in, where they're like stuck in a cubicle, they hate their job, they feel like they're not doing anything that is positively impacting the world, or like it's not aligned with their values. And then they decide to start a brand and it does really well. They're able to pay themselves, they're able to quit their job. Like that's like, it sounds cheesy, but that is life changing, right? Like when you're able to finally do something you've dreamt about for years and years. And not only that, you're also able to support yourself doing it. You're able to do it full time. Like that's something that's really rewarding. And to have played a small part in that, like that never gets old. So that's always something that like warms my heart. And then on, I guess, the flip side, from a brand perspective, I think it's always so rewarding when we see the data come back, because we're really into data. And like we talked about earlier around greenwashing, like the facts and the figures are really important. So having that year over year difference in the positive side, like I think that's really, really hopeful and helpful to see, even if it's a little bit at the beginning. Like every little bit helps. And if every single brand did that little bit, whether it's like lowering their carbon emissions a little bit, or like eliminating some of their plastic in their supply chain, or even just thinking about how they can pay their garment workers more, like everyone just did that little bit, it adds up. So yeah, just seeing that, I think, is really rewarding.
Yeah, again, it's like those small steps that will lead to the big transformation versus like setting a lofty goal, but like setting in the future with like nothing to do now to work towards it. You're seeing kind of those incremental steps in the right direction. And yeah, those are amazing to celebrate.
Thanks. Yeah. And it's like everyone's celebrations, right? Like one of those brands win, like all of us win, because we're all working towards this together. Mm-hmm.
So I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the work that you do, what would it be?
Ooh. I guess vulnerability, actually, because, you know, when you're vulnerable and you share that you have these goals and maybe you didn't hit them, or you're just like really candid around what's going on, everyone can learn from that. And everyone can also feel like they're not in this alone. I think the problem right now, just generally in sustainability, but also in entrepreneurship, is a lot of people just share their highlight reels and then they don't really get real about what's actually going on. So if everyone could just be like a little bit more vulnerable and of course like kind to each other, I think that would be great.
Yeah. And I know you're pretty like transparent about even how you run Recloseted and like talking about the things you've learned in your business too. So I can see that it like goes right along with that. So well, this has been so great, Selena, to have you chat a little bit more, deep dive into what does a sustainable fashion future look like and what we can do, very actionable of what brands can do now to make that happen. So thank you for joining me today. Where can people find out more about Recloseted and follow you and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Allison. This is so fun. So we have our Recloseted Radio podcast, and Allison was just on, like she mentioned. So definitely go listen to her episode. If you want to learn more about how to launch and scale a brand, listen to the episode. And we're just at Recloseted on all platforms. So we're on YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, just literally everywhere. And you can check out recloseted.com for any of our free resources and more information about us as well.
I'll put links to all that in the show notes. And yeah, thanks again for joining me today.
Thanks.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.